The presenting sponsor of Moon Tower Soccer is FVF Law.
To find out what makes FVF a different kind of injury law firm, you can visit FVF.law.
Hello, friends. Thanks for listening to Moon Tower Soccer. This week, we review Austin's 1-0 loss in St. Louis. We'll preview Austin's next Copateos match in Houston this weekend with local legend Glenn Davis. And we'll also cover the rest of the Austin FC news of the week. My name is Landon Cottam, and I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Jeremiah Bentley.
Hey, everybody. I'm Jeremiah Bentley. And Landon, you mentioned this, I think, a couple weeks ago on the show, that you've been spending some time, like, away from your computer and off email on the weekends. And I, like, how is that as somebody who's personally terminally online and knows that it's, like, not good for my mental health but can't walk away from it? Like, how do you feel about that?
It has been very good for me personally, if we can... We can get serious for a second.
Okay, let's do it.
It has legitimately been very good for me because on weekends where Austin is terrible, and then...
Which is most weekends at this point.
Which is most weekends at this point, and for the last year, there's sections of the fan base, how do I put this, who either are consumed by the negativity or some of them relish in the negativity, and the... Current versions of Twitter seem to reward this kind of behavior. And so when I get on there, it's all I ever see is that. And then if I, not even soccer stuff, it's other terrible things happening in the world. And I kind of decided I didn't want that to just like control my mood and my life. And so I've decided to just like turn it off. I'll when I do my rewatch, I'll dig in and start trying to get caught up on as much of the soccer info that I missed and all of that. But the rest of the weekend, I'm trying to just like enjoy my weekend and live my life outside of this soccer stuff that we already spend a ton of time on. And so just trying to carve out some parts of my life for other things.
Well, that seems healthy. And one of the places where I think you see the most of that, well, you're on Twitter more, like I'll put it on Reddit and Facebook. Like one of the super annoying things over the last few weeks has been when Austin wins, you know, everybody, all the Wolf in people just like flooding the wall with where's all the Wolf out people. And then when Austin loses, it's the same thing in reverse. And I'm like, no, like, I mean, it's the curse of social media. Everybody's just talking past each other. Nobody's really trying to convince, not just trying to like build a narrative about anything. So I think that's a great idea for you to do that. And it probably makes sense for more of us to have a little less time online.
Yeah, Ashley's been out of town, so I've been watching like old action movies and stuff. Which are you an action movie guy? I've never cared that much about action movies.
I generally am. Yes,
I've been listening to this movie podcast, and they're covering John McTiernan, the director who did Predator and Die Hard, and they were going through his movies. And so I've gone back and watched some of his movies after hearing a bit about his craft and how good he is at making those movies. And it's given me more of an appreciation for that kind of film.
You know, not shockingly, I love big dumb films. What I have been watching, which I don't love, is like the first two seasons of Parks and Rec. I decided to rewatch that show.
Why don't you love that?
I love most of that show, but there's like a particular character. This is the first two seasons that suddenly disappears. I don't remember the guy's name right now, but I felt like the show got a lot better when he went away.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. You're right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. All right, we are going to talk about the St. Louis match. But first, let's get into this week's story of the week. I know we kind of started this segment as the season started, and therefore, most weeks, the biggest story of the week is the game. But we have a bit of news this week. This is Paul Tenorio reporting for The Athletic, that there's some big MLS roster rules coming up. And given how the game went over the weekend and then the state of Austin's roster, I feel like these rules are a pretty big deal for MLS in general, but specifically for a team like Austin who needs some more flexibility in how they can rebuild this squad. They got thrown, not a big lifeline, but a small lifeline, a very small little lifesaver donut has been tossed their way by the MLS Board of Governors or whatever they're called.
Yes. So this is, we believe this will take place this summer. And under current state, a team can have three designated players. Three full designated players or two designated players and a guy you can buy down dependent upon how many U22 players you have. So Austin with two or three U22 players, or maybe even one, depending upon how you look at it. But with three originally, that's the reason that like Austin has two full DPs and then Alex Rainey can be bought down. Now they must rules for the summer, or that you can have the option of having three DPs and three U22s, or two DPs, four U22s, and $2 million in GAM.
Yeah, so they're essentially separating those two things affecting each other as much. They still do a little bit with the two and four thing, but
not as much. Yeah,
right. And so, big picture, I like this rule change because it allows more flexibility in how you build your team, which I think is what a lot of people have been calling for quite a long time. That's the way forward that I kind of subscribe to as well. It's not the most flexibility. It's not a huge change, but it does help. It does give front offices a little bit of flexibility, a little bit of different ways to build a team. And so for Austin specifically, I guess let's talk about the other changes as well. So the other changes, going from one buyout per season to two buyouts per season, and you can use that buyout whenever, which I think that rule had already kind of come into play. But the other one is that it has to do with outgoing transfers that you can convert to GAM. They essentially changed. I don't want to get too much into that. I feel like that's less pertinent to Austin's situation at the moment, but they've changed up, like, if you sell a player, how much of that money can you change to GAM? They've shaken that up a little bit. I want to focus on the first two for Austin's situation. So the two buyouts per season, I think, is big just because it's so hard to get out of bad contracts or to get rid of underperforming players in this league. One buyout per season, what that means, a buyout is Anthony Precourt, the ownership group, pays out of their pockets the rest of that player's salary for the year. They walk away, they get to clear them from their cap hit and can replace them during the transfer window. Having one is helpful. Having two is even more helpful, like literally twice as helpful to a team like Austin who has some bad contracts. I think the question there is how ambitious are they going to be with using these buyouts, and how much is the ownership group willing to pay to see some of these bad contracts go away?
Yeah, and it reminds me of a little bit of the NFL rule on challenges, on replay challenges. Like if you only have one, you have to be very, very, very sure that is the only move that you're going to make during the year. So you might not pull the trigger even on a move you might otherwise with two. So like I feel like it's even more than double flexibility, just because you can kind of use one on whatever you might, like we've talked about some scenarios, like maybe Austin needs a little more flexibility and buys out a guy like Matt Bersano, who does not seem to add a lot of value to the roster, and frees a little bit of money up, right? And you probably wouldn't do that if there was only one buyout available, because you might have to save that for situations in the past where Austin has had Ulysses Segura was one. Amro Tarek was the other one. Yeah.
I think those are the only two Austin has ever used.
I think it's the only two. That's right. Yeah. And otherwise they've just let people's contract run out. So yeah, you do have a lot more flexibility now in this situation.
Yeah. So let's run through some scenarios that would be possible with these new rules. And again, like we're guessing to a certain extent, just because we don't know what allocation money looks like. We don't know what cap space looks like, other than generally there's not a lot of room to work there. So let's start with best case scenario. The most
ambitious is best case. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the best case scenario for the roster and for Austin fans requires the ownership group to be ambitious. I think what that means is like the clear choice, if money is not an issue, is buying out Emiliano Rigoni. He's an extremely underperforming designated player, one of the most important roster spots, the most important roster spots in an MLS roster. And that contract is really weighing this team down at the moment. The problem is he's expensive. He makes just over $2 million guaranteed. So if they bought him out mid-season even, I guess they could still do it now and try to replace him before the transfer window closes, but that seems more unlikely by the day. But let's say this is going to happen in the summer, that if they buy him down, they'd have to pay out half of his salary essentially. So that's $1 million out of the ownership group's pockets. It's not such a high number that I think it's impossible, but I'm also not going to hold my breath for it, because it is still quite a bit of money that they're essentially paying twice. They'll pay him to leave and they'll pay someone else to come in.
Yeah. And I think that's the move you make if you have somebody identified that you are going to bring in during the summer window, because otherwise you could just let his contract run out, right? And pay nothing and not use a buyout.
Right.
If there's a target, you know, we've talked about possibly not financially feasible now, like forward targets, and there's some rumors that Austin has some guys are looking at. Like, if there's somebody they can bring in, that move makes sense.
Yeah, and so things that would go along with that, let's continue on this best-case scenario. Buying out Rigoni, buying down Alex Ring off of his DP contract and making him just a standard TAM player, that would open up two designated player spots that then they could fill this summer. Again, like, who knows if the players they come and bring in to replace them in those roster spots would be good, but that would be an ambitious step forward. Who knows if it'll happen? Let's look at the worst case scenario here, where, okay, ownership group doesn't want to spend that much money to make a player go away, so they're not going to buy out Rigoni. We don't really have any cap space to sign any other players, or to fill, like, even if we could buy down Ring, maybe there's not enough caps allocation money to do that, or there's not enough cap space to really make any other big signings within what we have now. Like, that feels just as realistic, if not more realistic, than the first scenario we mentioned.
Oh, I think absolutely. And I think knowing the cap issues that Austin has had and the value and acquisitions that Austin's made during the summer, the fact that, and knowing a bunch of players are going to come off the books at the end of the year, I can definitely see a scenario where Burrell sort of sits on summer moves other than kind of the one we know is going to happen, and saves those other spots for flexibility in the offseason.
Yeah, and the goodwill with the ownership group to say, like, okay, we'll give you $1 million to buy out the second half of Rigoni's contract for the year, but that's $1 million less we're going to let you spend on a DP whenever you make that signing. Like, that's probably a real conversation that's being had at the moment. So something to keep in mind there. Let's kind of explore the middle ground here now. So more realistic options. As far as buyouts go, you mentioned Matt Bersano. That seems like the most realistic one to me, just because he's taking up a senior roster spot. Unless something bad happens, he's on track to not make a bench appearance even this year. Like, that one feels like the most realistic buyout option. It's still not ideal, because if we have Damian Loss floating around on the second team, then you say, okay, if something happens to one of the first two guys, Cleveland and Stuver, then you have someone else that you could say, okay, we could throw him in an MLS game and he wouldn't embarrass himself. I don't think that's the case at the moment with our crop of second team goalkeepers. And so it would still be slightly risky, because you ideally want three first team keepers, but you don't necessarily want three first team keepers taking up senior roster spots. So that would be pick number one for me. As far as other players to buy out, like, who else is even a realistic option here?
I mean, there's not a lot of dead weight. This is not a D deep roster. This is not a roster with 20 senior players on it. So it's not like there's a lot of extra people sitting around. I think we talked off air a little bit, like depending upon how things advance over the next couple months, knowing that Dessler's coming in, John Kolmanich might be an option if Biru keeps developing and Kolmanich sees less playing time. But again, you make that move with, you have to have something else going on, or Austin's just as thin after that move as they were before to no real upside.
Right. That puts Hector Jimenez playing probably not insignificant minutes this year if that happens, which not an ideal scenario. It could Hector Jimenez be a target for the buyout? Like, maybe it helps cap-wise a little bit, or he's on a supplemental roster spot.
He's on a supplemental roster spot, though, so it doesn't really matter there.
Doesn't really
either.
Help anything.
Yeah.
I mean, looking through the roster, it's either people who are probably a little too expensive or people we can't really do without. Like, I've heard Zardes be floated around. I think he's probably a little too expensive. That's going to cost, I think he's on like 900K or something like that, 800K. And he's got this year and next year guaranteed on his contract. So that feels a little less likely for that reason. And so, like, it just doesn't seem like there's a lot of options. So, yeah, like I said, maybe buying out nobody is what ends up happening.
So I guess the summary here is that Austin will have more flexibility, and it's probably going to come later, and people shouldn't expect a ton of significant movement during the summer unless there's a bunch of moves Burrow has up his sleeves that have not been telegraphed or nobody knows about.
Yeah, one of the other scenarios, so you mentioned one of the options now is to have two full senior DPs, and then you can have four U22 players, and you get an additional $2 million in GAM. So this season, because they're implementing it in the summer, what Tenorio has reported is that it would be $1 million because you're only getting half the season's worth of that GAM. And so I was thinking, like, okay, what if we buy down Alex Ring and get that million in GAM, and then we can use it elsewhere? But it would cost $1 million in GAM to buy down Alex Ring. And so you're essentially buying down Alex Ring with $1 million in GAM to get $1 million in GAM, which again, doesn't really help us in the immediate sense.
No, there's not a lot of great options. This just shows kind of how ineffective the roster build has been up until at least the beginning of this season. And how it's going to take a lot of work to dig out.
Yeah. Still a lot of work ahead. But these changes do give me a little bit of hope that the changeover can be slightly faster than what we expected before.
All right. Well, let's take a break, and then we'll talk about St. Louis. When no one is around.
Moontower Soccer is brought to you by our friends at FEF Law, the official injury lawyers of Austin FC.
FEF is a different kind of personal injury law firm dedicated to community, transparency, and client education. And you can check out their podcast, Summary Judgment, wherever you get your podcasts.
You can go to FEF.law to find out what makes FEF a different kind of injury law firm and why understanding your legal options can dramatically change the outcome of a case. Once again, that's FEF.law. Amplify Credit Union is a member-owned financial cooperative that served the needs of Central Texans for over five decades. As a credit union, Amplify has no shareholders or parent companies. That means more of your money stays in the community.
Amplify has been the home of fee-free banking since 2022. Their free checking accounts come with zero overdraft fees or minimum balance. That means Amplify's fee-free checking accounts help you get more mileage from your everyday spending.
Amplify membership is open to any Texas resident. Learn to trust your bank again at Amplify Credit Union. To learn more and to register for free parking at the Amplify Esperanza branch on game day, go to www.goamplify.com/moontower-soccer.
Moontower Soccer is brought to you by Tony C's Pizza and Beer Garden, serving New York-style pizza and authentic Italian. Now open in Round Rock in front of Del Diamond and on Anderson Lane near Shoal Creek Boulevard. And I happen to mention to past guest of the show, Kristen Markham, on a previous version of the show, that we were doing a deal with Tony C's, and the Anderson location is one of her go-tos when picking up dinner for her family when she's had to work late. So it's a unpaid endorsement from the Markham family for Tony C's Pizza and Beer Garden.
The Anderson Lane Beer Garden is just 2 miles from QGU Stadium. You can stop by for a pizza or a pint before all this year's home games. And then with TVs on every wall, it's the perfect spot to watch all away games. And they will play them with sound on, which I know is super important to me and to all of you.
I want a reminder, the April promo details, the High Sign is the brewery of the month, and they're Seamus the Fiddler Irish. Red and Violet the Blueberry Bond. The pizza of the month is Little Italy, which is fresh mozzarella, olive oil, salami, capicola, cherry tomato, ricotta, hot honey, and basil.
And then Two for Tuesday is two pizzas for the price of one every Tuesday. Pitcher Perfect Thursday is half price pitchers of beer on every Thursday. You could dine in or pick up lunch or dinner at Tony C's Pizza and Beer Garden. Check them out online at tonycsbeergarden.com. All right, we are back. Jeremiah, let's jump into this St. Louis game. So Austin was feeling a little bit better about themselves, feeling a little bit better about ourselves as a fan base as well, after two straight home wins. Going on the road to St. Louis, we knew it was going to be a tough one, right? St. Louis is a team that Austin has struggled with, and then also it's just a hard place to go. I think I saw a stat that it's like three or four teams have won there, period. Since they've existed. So tough place to go. And that proved out. It was a tough game.
Yeah, it was for sure. And I know the numbers kind of speak for themselves. And if you've followed anything online or kept up with any story, so Austin ends up with, after having a run of almost getting very, very few shots on target, and then over the last couple of matches, finally getting some shots on target, Austin ends up with two shots in this match. Zero on target, you know, really ineffective offensively. We were looking at the passing charts, and Diego Rubio ever touched the ball? Like, I feel like O'Brien was getting the ball like way back in defense, and then Rubio like almost never saw service, and that didn't change when Giassi Zardes played in. Obviously, St. Louis is a tough club and style to play against, seems like, particularly for this way that Austin is set up, and this game just kind of bore out the deficiency in the clash of styles.
Yeah, the first half, going into halftime, I did not feel terrible about this game. It was ugly. It wasn't that fun to watch. But as far as strategically and tactically for Austin, I thought, like, okay, this is probably the best way to do this, given the circumstances, given where we are, who we're playing, how teams like this and this team specifically have hurt Austin in the past. This is probably the way to go. You're playing a little bit more conservative, being stingy defensively, hit them on the break if you get an opportunity, and or like try to capitalize on set pieces. And then if you can swing momentum forward a little bit, then you can kind of settle into Austin's, the way that they want to play, keeping the ball and using ball movement and player movement to kind of disorganize the defense. We saw a little bit of that right at the end of the second half. I think there's 5 or 10 minutes where Austin was a bit more on the front foot. And so going into halftime, I was like, okay, this is not a terrible spot to be in. But then the second half, Austin wasn't really able to recapture what they created at the end of the first half there. And then as St. Louis scores that goal, then we're playing exactly into St. Louis's hands, right? Start to throw numbers forward, attack a bit more, and they're just going to sit deep and then hit you on the break over and over. And I think like they ended up with 10 shots in the game, but I think half of them came in the last 10 or 15 minutes, right? So goals change games, as Josh Wolf likes to say. That was definitely true here, but it seems like Austin kind of let that happen in many ways, which we'll get into here in a second.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. I do want to go back to the first half a little bit, because you did see, I mean, if one thing, like those styles are so such a clash that, like, even if you are not super tactically aware, like it's just so obvious from the different ways that they play. And you did see, like, Danny Pereira did like dribble through a line a couple times, and Hyder O'Brien used his speed, you know, at least once or twice, like to make a difference, but there was just the chances were few and they never came to fruition. Again, they didn't even come to shots. So that part was really, really tough. I do quibble. I think Josh said after the game that Austin had plenty of opportunities. I feel like it was a very generous use of the term plenty. They had a few opportunities that kind of had to all go perfectly right to result in the goal.
There were a few moments that like were dangerous moments where Austin had the ball in dangerous positions, even in the box, that did not lead to shots and therefore didn't register his shots, didn't register his XG. But that's like maybe two or three moments that I'm talking about. I wouldn't call that plenty necessarily.
Yeah, I agree. So before we maybe get into the run of play, let's talk about well, the lineup. So I think the lineup that Austin ran out is exactly what we thought we would see. I think everybody expected Biru to be a sub, not be a sub, be a replacement for Hector after the way Hector played last week. I know there was some, man, with this midfield, this is part of the showing that the midfield is like all a series of incomplete parts. Like there's an argument for Valencia coming in to provide stability against the press, but then you lose somebody else who can do something else, you know, productively and progressively, although they didn't do a ton of that. So, but no changes other than Beater. So we continue to see Heinz and Cascante at center back, Ring Pereira and Drusi in the midfield, and Obrian, Rubio and Wolf up top. Were you surprised by any of that?
No, not really. I mean, I think in hindsight, you might look at how this game went and say, okay, maybe Valencia is the right option here. But like in these last two games, Danny Pereira was so pivotal in what was going on. It feels super harsh to pull him for a game like that. And then Alex Ring as well was like, it's one of those two guys who you're pulling for Johan Valencia. And it just seems like a pretty tough decision. So yeah, maybe, like I said, in hindsight, maybe it looks like the right option, but I don't think it's a silver bullet. Yeah. And then the rest of it, I mean, these are the only players that have given us anything really in the last however many games. So yeah, the rest of it felt fairly obvious to me.
Yep. So we've kind of talked, Austin, you know, game flow wise, weather's a lot in the first 30 minutes or so, 35 minutes. Finally, the momentum chart from whatever website your favorite site is turns a little bit green around close to 40. Austin finally looks like they're changing things up a little bit. Still no shots on goal until what, right at the end of the first half? No shots, period. There was not a shot on goal the whole match.
But Drusi gets one. There's kind of a box scramble that he takes, like potentially could have left it and let Obrian hit from a cleaner angle and a cleaner approach on the ball. And he takes it and kind of scuffs it and it goes out for a corner for a goal kick or something. Another chance where I can't remember who plays this cross, but finds Drusi crashing at the back post and he doesn't quite get clean contact on it and that goes out. And then I think there's one more chance that I can't remember what it was right now, but that ended up, I think, not leading to an actual shot. But yeah, we were getting closer, getting in better positions, keeping the ball and kind of pinning them back with possession a bit more. But yeah, unable to capitalize on any of it.
And then, like you mentioned, Austin's kind of sort of unable to recreate that magic in the second half. And, you know, Klaus has his, what, first goal in the run of play since September or something of last year? If I remember that's right. And I feel like, I mean, you're going to talk us through this, but there's, one of these team breakdown goals. There was, like, at least three guys who did something dumb that lead to this goal.
Yeah, I think it's more than three, which we'll get into it. Joel Klaus is the one who puts this in, but let's rewind a little bit. Austin has the ball and kind of a transition-ish moment, not a lot of numbers forward. They give up the ball in the attacking half. The ball kind of trickles back a little bit deeper. This is where I think this play starts to break down. And I want to give credit to Kevin Morris partially here. He, if you find his Twitter account, he clipped a longer version of this goal that's goes back far enough to the part we're going to talk about, which the highlights do not show. But against a team like St. Louis, like I talked about liking the gameplay, trying the game plan, trying to be a little bit more stingy, but the players have to be like, have the discipline and the, like the focus to know when, okay, normally we would step a little higher and maybe press here. We're not going to do that today. We're going to drop into our shape and not let them just like split us in half with one big pass. And so this ball trickles back. Austin's front five start to kind of press a little bit. They play the ball up the line to Ostrak. He cuts in, plays a big switch to Totland, their like high flying right back. The first individual mistake here, Owen steps thinking he can cut that switch ball off, but it goes just over his head, putting Totland into a bunch of space. As he's driving at the back line.
Wait, that was my one of three.
Yeah, there's number one. The next one, I'm going to say Biru, because we've got two or three defenders in the box. They've got, I think, only Klaus crashing centrally, and then another player arriving a little bit later on the backside. Totland driving into the box, but somebody's there. I can't remember who it was. Somebody was there to kind of step to him and challenge there. And then
I think it was Heinzeig, I think.
Yeah, there was someone there. And then I don't remember who played the final pass there.
It's Alm.
Alm. Okay, so Totland plays it out to Alm wide, who is like not that wide. He's on the edge of the 18. Biru should have stepped to that earlier. He should have recognized that there were numbers in the middle. And I think Heinzeig earlier on was even pointing, saying like, go. Like, you need to go cover that guy.
Yep.
And he stays super central. And so Alm gets the ball like right on the edge of the 18 and carries it into the 18 and then plays that low cross in. So Biro's number two. Number three is Cascante, where like Klaus is really good. First of all, he is really good and his movement is stellar. That touch to put the classy finish into the back post was really nice. But when he's the only guy in the box, like, don't worry about setting a line. Don't worry about like whatever you are trying to do structurally. If there's a lot more players in the box, I think what the center backs did there is fine. But in that situation, Cascante needs to realize Klaus is the only one here. He's the most dangerous player on their team at the moment. Stick tight to him. And Julio kind of keeps the line dropping closer to goal. Klaus drops back and he doesn't react fast enough. And it's not a super high, like an easy finish or a high percentage chance, but you can't give a guy like Klaus that much, like that kind of space in the box when he's the only person in the box. So yeah, we counted these three individual errors, but it starts like structurally, like, and you heard Alex Ring talk about in the post game saying, talking about execution, talking about sticking to the plan. And this is one of the moments where they didn't do that. If they're going to be stingy and play a little deeper and play a bit more defensive in that moment, those front players need to realize like, this is not the moment. We can't press here. Let's drop in when we have the moment and be a little bit more, more difficult to break down.
Yeah. And then, but they don't. And then that's just after that, Austin again does not create a lot. This is not one of those. This is a team that's come back, right? I think it's 7 points from losing positions, if I remember right, out of the nine they have on the year. But it did not look like that was what was going to happen on the night, and that is not what would happen on the night. So Rigoni comes on at 65, is the first of the second half subs, does Rigoni stuff, which is basically nothing. Like the one time Austin had a few guys in the box, he like launched a moon ball in the stands across the goal on what I think was a cross.
I think it went over the bar. It went out over the bar. I'm quite certain he was trying to cross it.
Trying not shoot. Kolmanich comes in at 78.
Oh,
has God. A lot of really pretty curveballs that lead to nothing.
He was bad. not the crosses, whatever, like they were static movement, which was like, that's not the ideal scenario for one of these crosses, which is what we saw a lot of last year. But also in the buildup, Kolmanich is so one-dimensional with what he tries to do. And so as he receives and pushes up the field, the St. Louis defenders knew that, okay, he's not fast enough to push up and beat me down the line here. And I don't know if this was scouting or if they just recognized it after a couple of times watching him, but Kolmanich will not touch the ball with his right foot. And so his favorite move is to like feign up the sideline and then kind of chop it back across his body with his left foot. And he tried that four or five times in a row and they took it off of him every time. And so, yeah, just crosses to nowhere, can't keep the ball. Like, I've got criticisms for Biru, but Kolmanich was a step down when he came on.
And then the other one is Jussi Zardes, who, I don't know, just had a really forgettable, I don't remember him doing anything particularly good or particularly bad. Yeah, when, he was just there.
I don't want to be too judgmental of any of, like, either of the strikers, Ruby or Zardes, just because we didn't get the ball into their part of the field. So
that's not hard on them.
Yeah, it's hard to blame them for any of that. But yeah, didn't really do anything either way.
So then, so we see it out. Austin 1-0 loss away. So I think we mentioned this. I don't know. So it's like six times that Austin's played St. Louis. Still has not gotten a victory, which I think is the only Western Conference club Austin hasn't beaten yet after picking up the San Jose win last week. A tough road ahead with Houston, the top three teams in the West, I believe, in the next 3 weeks. Houston, LA Galaxy at home, and then Vancouver away. So let's talk about other players maybe that we haven't mentioned. Who stood out good or bad to you?
I don't know if anybody stood out good. We mentioned Beer. We'll stick on him for a second. I thought his defensive positioning wasn't very good most of the day. I think, like, just physically speaking, he seems capable of defending, just like main, like containing 1v1. He seems decent at that, but I think he still has some work to do as far as just decision making and positioning himself in the right spots to set himself up to succeed.
They did get his age right.
I thought that was funny.
The media guy got corrected and they did call him 23-year-old. So we've got that part down for him now.
Who else we got? I O'Brien didn't have a very good match. Danny was pretty poor, which they were targeting him. They were the two forwards in their press, their line of two, were staying super tight on him. As he received the ball and turned, they were both converging and putting a lot of pressure on him. And he tried to dribble out of pressure a few times and gave up the ball. Luckily, none of those ended up in goals, but very easily could have. I feel like I'm just going to mention everyone's name and then say how bad they were.
I have Alex Ring as a real mixed bag. I thought he played better than whatever his FOTMOB rating was. Like, he had one really good moment where he was like running back and got a foot on a ball that I was sure was going to be a yellow, if not a red.
Yeah.
He made a smart play, and I think that's probably the best you get from like 2024 Alex Ring, is he makes some hero plays and
yeah,
makes
he's good for a hero moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he was dropping, he dropped deeper in the buildup. And so it was, as we got a little further forward, he would rotate back and kind of play alongside Triussi as that dual 10. But as we were deeper, he was dropping in, and him and Danny were both playing in that double pivot kind of look. But I didn't think either of them did a lot to help the buildup or get the ball forward in any real way. Owen Wolf, we talked about like the kind of winger that he can be or is. And I mentioned a couple of shows back that like there's a certain role that you can have a winger play or the game will call for from a winger that I do not like Owen Wolf for at all. And that's what kind of game this one was, where we weren't getting any forward momentum and weren't getting numbers into our attacking half. That's I think that's really the only way Owen's going to succeed here is if we can get numbers around him when he gets the ball. But if you're sending the ball wide to Owen 1v1 with nobody ahead of him and nobody close to him to play off of, like, he's not really going to be that useful or dangerous, and he wasn't in this one. He's decent at running in behind. Like, he's fast enough to kind of be somewhat of a threat there, but the few moments when we got the ball wide to him, he was out there on an island, and he or most of our wingers are not the kind of players to really be able to turn that into anything.
Yeah, and the other note I had was not a player note, but the you always know Ted Uncle's calling a game. Like, that guy, I don't think he had a particularly bad game, but he's just like the center of attention in every game that he's involved in.
It's that early card came out. I don't remember. It was the first 10 minutes. The first card comes out, and then I got nervous. But then he gave Chris Durkin a yellow, a well-deserved one, for a stupid foul on Driussi. And I was like, okay, maybe having Ted Uncle in this game is going to benefit us today if we can get Durkin sent off on a red card. But never able to make that happen. I think this would be one of my highlights of the game is Diego Rubio. Once Durkin gets that card, Rubio's after him. Like, he's in his ear. He's going after Klaus. He's going after whoever he can. And then this is another thing I love is on set pieces, when we're defending set pieces, they have Tim Parker, who's a big, mean SOB. And you think, like, okay, who are we going to get to cover him? One of our 6'2" center backs, whatever. Like, no, Diego Rubio covers him. And he's just in there, just like throwing shoulders and talking smack. And I absolutely love that he's like, no, that's me. I'm covering their biggest guy.
And he did a good job of it on the one where there was sort of the great opportunity. And another part of those is, like, at one point, Uncle and Beater are like jawing each other. I was like, what language are they arguing in right now? I can't figure it out. It's like the universal language of trash talk. I'm not sure.
It just seems like Beater was just yelling at him in Portuguese, which I can't imagine. Ted Uncle's Portuguese is great, so who knows?
Yeah. Is there anybody else you want to cover? You want to take a break and then do the Houston preview with Glenn?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll just say, like, I thought, like, the initial setup and the idea was good going into this game, but execution not good enough. And I like to make fun of people who blame every missed pass or every missed goal on Josh Wolf. I'll give him credit for, like I said, the setting up this game plan and changing his style to try to set his team up to succeed a little bit better. Like, the lapse of defensive structure and the lack of discipline to kind of drop back and get into that structure, I'll put primary blame on players, but that is one area where a coach does have an effect. Like, a coach can't teach a player to beat a guy 1v1. A coach can't do, like, the coach doesn't have an Xbox controller over there making them do things in the attacking half, but defensive structure is a thing that can be coached and can be improved with some focus on that. And that's one spot where, like, I'll concede to the Wolf Out crowd, like, if we are going to shift the way we play a little bit, this is a thing that can be improved with just time spent on it. One other thing to keep in mind next week is talking about Ted Uncle. Julio Cascante got his fifth yellow of the season. He's going to be suspended for the next game. So this is another situation where, like, it feels great to know that we have Matt Hedges sitting on the bench to step in, who has been, even in some pretty poor games, Matt Hedges has played well this year. So I saw some people saying, like, how much are we paying Matt Hedges to sit on the bench? It was like, it's enough to have, like, we're paying him enough to have someone on the bench to not be terrified whenever we lose one center back.
Right. And not move Alex Ring back. Yeah.
Worth it.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like on that point, like, I mean, Heinz Eichig has created enough value so far that if you look, you sort of treat the two as a duo, like, it's fairly cost effective.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like, whenever guys are, like, contributing and they're useful guys who I don't actively want to get rid of, I'm less worried about how much money they're making. And especially for a guy like Hedges, like he's a veteran and like that amount of experience, he's on a lot of money, but he's not taking DP spots. He's not taking an exorbitant amount of allocation money. So I'm less mad about those. It's two more years of Jossi Zardes' kind of high salary that makes me a little more upset. It's Ragone's DP slot that makes me a little more upset. But Matt Hedges, I'm like, with the way he's played this season, I'm not too worked up about his salary right now. Any other thoughts on the game?
No, I think let's go ahead and take a break and look forward to this upcoming match this weekend. Premier sponsor of Moon Tower Soccer is McGuire Woods Consulting, helping clients in the public affairs space, from lobbying at the local, statewide, and federal levels to digital and communication campaigns across the country.
McGuire Woods Consulting has offices in 10 MLS cities, but only advertises on this Austin FC podcast because the Houston Dynamo and FC Dallas stink. That's what it says in the ad copy. I'm sorry, it doesn't say that. Don't blame that on McGuire Woods. Contact our friends at McGuire Woods Consulting at mwcllc.com for more information.
Moon Tower Soccer is also brought to you by Sage Wilson Realty. The Sage Wilson team is made up of Austin experts who are client-focused and have over 30 years of combined real estate experience. They're also giving away 2 tickets to an upcoming match. So fill out the form in the show notes for your chance to win.
All right, we are happy to be joined by Glenn Davis. Glenn is a longtime soccer broadcaster, mostly covering the Dynamo, but covering Texas soccer and national soccer as well. He is the host of Soccer Matters, which is his radio show there in Houston, but soccer broadcasting legend here in the state of Texas. So, Glenn, we're very happy to be joined by you.
Landon, Jeremiah, always love coming on, talking with you guys, and always love listening to the Moon Tower.
So, thanks, man.
Glenn, we've got the Dynamo coming up here. I think a lot of people had written off the Dynamo because of the injuries they have in the team right now, but that's not been the case. Jeremiah, do you want to set us up for where the Dynamo actually are at the moment?
Yeah, for sure. So 2023, the Dynamo finished fourth in the West, made it to the conference finals, lost to LAFC. Not a lot of off-season changes, and you can probably talk more to Glenn to like the effect of both those. But yeah, having two key players out, starting the season unavailable, I don't think people expected a lot out of them. But right now, Dynamo are sitting third in the West, 4 wins, 2 losses and a draw, beat Minnesota United last week, kind of exceeding expectations, I would think, from what a impartial observer would expect from this club so far this year.
Yeah, I think everybody would have thought that. I mean, the minute you lose Hector Herrera, you got a very differing team and you're actually playing a lot differently, right? Because everything really went through him last year. He had, to me, what was like a Driussi type season in a kind of a differing way from Driussi's season 2 years ago where he was just lights out. Well, Herrera affected the team in every single way, in every third of the field, in doing so many different things from leading the team on and off the field. So, without him and then without the addition of a striker in the offseason, which still remains a big question mark, the idea was they were going all in on Sebas Ferreira coming back after a loan at Vasco da Gama. A couple seasons ago, he had 13 goals. Vasco da Gama didn't score a goal. They claim he came in fitter. He was ready to go. He's had 2 injuries since. He's had an assist and he's had a goal. He does look different. It looks like he's ready to play. Looks like he's got a differing level of fitness. The Dynamo and Pat Onstad and Ben Olsen kind of felt that like, look, okay, we're a better team now. We plug him into it and let's see if a real pure goal scorer can produce for us. But those remain the big questions. It's a team that's built on great collective defending, and it's a team that's built on a good possession game that'll get better when Herrera returns to the lineup, and the word was possibly he may be available on the bench against Austin FC. But this team is all about collective defending. It was last year, and it's also about the possession game, and that keeps them in every game. They fight for Ben Olsen. They're winning games 1-0. You know, can you do that all year long? They did it pretty far last year until the Western Conference Finals. So we'll see. But I think those are the two big questions, Ferreira coming back and Hector Herrera.
So there's still some of the key players from a successful 2023 season in this squad. How has Ben Olsen kind of moved the puzzle pieces around this season to make this work?
Yeah, in the absence of Herrera, they've played Coco Carrasquilla a little deeper at times, which is what he does for Panama. They played Jan Gregoosh there, who was a real quick signing once they realized Herrera was going to be out for a while. You guys know Gregoosh. So they've been playing the game without an actual out-and-out center forward lately. They're playing with two withdrawn forwards, really, that don't even occupy center backs in Sebastian Kovalchuk and Amin Bassi. So, you know, there's been little tactical nuances. But again, the heart and soul of the team is a collective spirit. Work ethic. It's all there.
I wanted to ask about Olsen, because like he was obviously, well, not obviously, he did not seem to be a super popular pick. Like it didn't seem like there's a lot of excitement with him as the guy that came back. So like, what has he done to sort of like prove the doubters wrong? Or like, what have you seen from him that make you think like he is the guy?
Yeah. So in the case of Ben Olsen, it really is the competitive spirit, the collective nature. I don't think, I haven't seen a game where they don't compete, right? They may not play the best, but I don't see a game where they don't compete. So you have to compete 90 minutes against these guys. And I think, look, if you've got a culture in Major League Soccer where you got players that are playing for a coach, you got a decent level of competition at every position, it's pretty hard not to make it into the playoffs, honestly. So you check those two boxes, you check a lot of things. Now, again, big question mark is where do the goals come? They've only had two multi-goal games, and they're coming off one of them, which is basically a game where they had one player who had two shots on goal, and he scored the game-winning goal. The other goal was an own goal. So how long can you go on those thin margins? You know, I used to say you can't do it without an out-and-out striker or somebody who's going to really threaten and can score goals. But, you know, they're finding ways to get it done. They did the same thing last year. So we'll see. Look, they brought in a striker from New York City FC, Gabe Siegel. He hasn't panned out. He's now on Dynamo 2. So they're electing to go with two withdrawn forwards and false nines as opposed to actually playing with a guy who's a center forward.
How do you see this matchup between Houston and Austin as far as the styles go? I know Austin really struggled against the style of St. Louis this past weekend. Houston is not the same team as St. Louis. Like, do you see an advantage stylistically between these two teams?
You know, I think the Dynamo will definitely press as much as they possibly can against Austin FC at home. But look, there are two teams coming off games. There wasn't a lot of chance creation. The Dynamo will open up a little bit more at home. I think that's what they do. They'll pick their moments to press. Sometimes they'll be in a mid block. You know, other times, you know, they'll tuck in and keep the game in front of them and sit a little bit deeper. And I'm probably describing a lot of teams in Major League Soccer, right? The way I'm saying this. So, you know, to me, it's still about chance creation. Can you win a game 1-0 at home against Austin FC? Sure, I guess you can. But I think both teams are looking to really figure out how they become better. I saw Josh Wolf saying at the end of the first half, he felt they had some, you know, they got into the box and they were maybe one pass or one good decision or one piece of execution away from it. But that's what everybody says when you're not scoring goals. You know, Ben Olsen says the same thing.
Yeah, I think that was probably true for about 10 minutes of that game. But
it was a tough watch. I watched it and listen, to be honest, if the Dynamo don't get a goalkeeping gem of a night from Steve Clark, everything is very different today.
So looking at the support in Houston right now, I know, like, looking at attendance, it was quite poor for several years there in Houston. And then new ownership comes in. There's some investment in this team. There's success on the field last year. What does that look like in the city there now?
As far as relevancy and attendance, I don't think the needle's moved, honestly. I mean,
not at all.
club was 29th out of 29th. You know, you still get people 8, 9, 10 years into this. It all started going downhill when the Dynamo moved over from Robertson, but you still get people, oh, you just got to win. Well, you won last year. It didn't do anything. The last time they made the playoffs, I think 2017, was that the year with Kyoto and Elise? They won 90% of their games at home. Did not do a thing to move the needle. So the obvious answer is just winning is an easy thing to say, just win and they'll come, and that's not true anymore. There's too much competition. There's too many other soccer games coming to Houston. You got Copa America. You got Brazil coming here. You got Messi probably twice, okay? They put the Inter-Miami Tigres game here. You got a lot of competition. And if you're not out there beating the bushes every day, and I mean every day, and you're not going after it in this soccer community to authentic soccer fans, you're not going to change it. So to me, it's not one thing. It's a 3 or 4-pronged attack. The product is definitely better. But you know, it's really the same old down here. And it saddens me being here as long as I've been here. I just don't really feel like there's a real push to get all these nooks and crannies of authentic soccer fans that are in Houston, Texas. It seems to be like we're going after the NBA crowd, or I really don't know. And, like I said, you got a more marketable product now. You have a star with Herrera when he comes back. So I really don't think it's changed at all, Landon.
That's interesting to hear. Yeah, I guess we see on TV every once in a while, so like some of the bigger attended games throughout, I guess like early when Herrera kind of stepped in, and then maybe earlier in the season when it's not so hot, we see some games that are decently attended. But looking at Dallas, who kind of had some similar issues over the years, my parents have left where I grew up and they now live south of Fort Worth. And on their local news, the Fort Worth News, they said there was a stretch where they're getting bombarded with FC Dallas advertising. Like, and they're an hour from the stadium and they're getting ad after ad after ad and like spots on local news, little activations and things like that. So it seems like from what you're saying that the Dynamo aren't doing those kinds of things at the moment.
I don't see enough of it. And I, you know, for me, when your core business is down, and again, I'm separating the competitive with the business side of it and the commercial side of it. When your core business is down, I really think you got to go to the people. I mean, if we really think that we're just going to do social media and that's going to attract people, or sponsored events from, you know, Shell and companies, it's a long shot. And this city's got lots of people from all over the world, every nook and cranny. You got big Nigerian base here, Central American. Guatemala sells out pretty much every time they come. El Salvador does. These crowds are ridiculous. It just does not translate to the MLS or the NWSL product. And that means you got to look at everything. And, you know, you can't say it's that you don't have a decent product now. It's a winning product. It got to the conference final last year. When Herrera's out there, he's a star like Altuve is on the Astros and CJ Stroud is on the Texans, right? I mean, he's that kind of a caliber guy that you can watch day in and day out, and you can do it rather inexpensively, quite frankly.
You've been pretty vocal over the last few days about shot creation, particularly with the way Dynamo and Austin have done over the last few matches. You've obviously spent a long time around this game and played this game. Like, what's the, why is nobody creating shots and how do you unlock that?
Yeah. And I think this goes for a lot of teams in MLS, but look, if I look at it specifically from the Dynamo, you know, where should expectations be and how fair should they be with Amin Bassi, Sebastian Kowalczyk, Coco Karaskia, Quinones last year, Aliyu this year. None of them have a history of scoring a lot of goals. So you have to factor that in to be fair with expectation with a lot of these guys. Kowalczyk scored an unbelievable goal in the last game to win the game, slipped it through the defender's leg. There were two shots on goal the whole game. I mean, you're playing on slim margins if you're going to try to win games this way. The Dynamo seem to be doing that. But I think at some point you have to look at personnel. Where are they in their careers? Where is their shelf life? You know, I knew that eventually Max Cerutti and these guys were not going to be able to produce after the first season because their shelf life was coming to an end, right? So, you know, I don't see anybody winning MLS Cups except teams that have guys like Cucho, Chicho, Vela, and players like that, right? I mean, show me the last time somebody won an MLS Cup without having a bona fide goal scorer. It might have been way back when Colorado played Dallas or something. But I just, you know, I just am so curious to see if the Dynamo could plug in a bona fide goal scorer and, you know, a guy that just every night, if he didn't score, regardless of whether they win or lose, is not in a good mood if he's not scoring goals. I would love to see that guy plugged into this team with a healthy Herrera. Maybe it's Sebas Ferreira. I don't know. That will be the comeback story of the year in MLS. But to me, sometimes it just comes down to personnel and where people are in their careers.
Yeah, personnel has been a big story.
I mean, Ben Olsen and Josh Wolf, you know, are pretty clear. They're saying we're getting the chance creation, you know, but how much can you expect sometimes out of people who that hasn't been their thing in their history of playing the game?
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to see. Had some exciting games between these two teams. Hopefully we can at least see more than two shots per team in this this one on Saturday, so we'll at least be entertained regardless of what happens. But Glenn, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Tell folks where they can find you.
Yeah, so in Houston, and we do talk Austin, and you know I'm going to have you guys on in the future. It's Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5, so it's ESPN975.com. On YouTube, we have a page, Soccer Matters. Love for people to subscribe over there. There's a lot of different content there. You know, like Wednesday night, I'll have a friend, Jordi Sunyer, who works for TV3 in Barcelona. He'll come on and kind of break down the Barcelona game. So we have a lot of interesting, fun guests. And Twitter and Instagram, at Glenn Davis Sock. So there you go. Shameless promotion.
No, we asked for it, so it's not shameless.
All right. Well, thanks some of the shit. So I guess we're banking on a 1-0 game, right?
It seems like it's not that.
we'll take the 4-3. We were talking about in the San Jose game. We'll take the 4-3 any day, even if we lose.
You know, you never know. We may just get that. Let's hope so.
All right. Thanks, Glenn. We appreciate it.
Landon, Jeremiah, thanks for having me on.
All right, we want to thank Glenn Davis one more time. We want to remind you to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We have finalized all of our Patreon rewards. Like, we're going to have them in hand relatively soon. So I think by next show, I'm going to try to have everything up on the website, everything for you to see, and then we're going to come for you. We're going to really start pushing the Patreon next week. But we're really excited about the merch rewards that we have set up. They're all very cool and I can't wait for you guys to see them. So be ready for that next week. I think that's all. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a review of the Copa Tejas match versus Houston and a preview of the home match versus LA Galaxy. And we'll cover all of the other Austin FC news. Until then, I'm Lenny Cottom.
I'm Jeremiah Bentley.
We'll get you next time.
When no one is around.
Thank for nothing, you never.
La gente.
Oh my God.